A major objective of our administration has been the strengthening of the Indiana State Police, its restoration to elite status among all American law enforcement agencies. And we believe we have an outstanding team led by Superintendent Weitzel hard at work on that. We've taken steps already, such as a substantial increase in pay, particularly at the entry level. And today we're very happy to announce another big step forward toward our goal of an increase of 200 more troopers in service and on the roads in this state by the end of next year. First of all, the first lateral class in Indiana history, that is to say, we've opened the ranks of state police to experienced troopers from elsewhere. We have had a number of Indiana troopers recruited out to other states who have these programs, and now we have one which has competed successfully. And secondly, the largest class in the history of the state police, in its 73-year history, this is, it appears, more than twice as big a class. There was a flood of applications, which I attribute in part, or Paul does in part, to the increased starting pay, but I would also say to the his efforts and others in carrying the message of this great public service career to young people in this state. And so we are very, very pleased at this these two steps forward and looking forward to their successful fruition in a stronger and more effective state law enforcement agency.
What do you anticipate is the net gain for that degree class after attrition?
Well, Paul tells me, and you can elaborate, he's aiming at 150, so he'll start 160. He does have people on a standby list, so I think if there are early washouts, then he and his team could choose to fill behind those. But the aim point, I guess, is 150 graduates. Am I correct?
That's right, sir. And typically, we built 2 weeks into the system whereby we can still replenish attrition and losses. We reach a point of no return where we can no longer fill the class, but we're hopeful to have enough folks in standby status and have enough extra positions at the academy to come very close to, if not meet 150, which is our goal.
Sir, in a typical year, how many retirements do you have?
We average 68 losses a year, by all means.
How many troopers do you have now?
We have 1,100, just a bit over that. Our full capacity is 1,334. We anticipate fully by December of 2007, we'll have put on 200 troopers above and beyond normal attrition, be at full strength.
A really thrilling precursor to this was a sixfold, I think Paul told me, increase in the number of applicants, that is, people seeking to make this their career. And so they've had by far the biggest pool to choose from. And Paul told me this morning that even though they haven't announced or advertised next year's class, he already has a few hundred applicants that have come in. So this is very, very encouraging, and I think gives us a good chance to hit the objective of a big net increase.
Didn't you lower the education requirements
We used to require 60 college credit hours or military experience, and we opened the process so that those who did not have those same qualifications could apply. But we will still give preference to college education and military service. But we wanted to take a look at those who might have value or experience in some other facet of life that might be useful.
How many of the 160 would not have made it into the class?
We don't turn the full applications in until the occasion of their interview. So those are just now coming in, and so we haven't had a chance to see. I did ask an over-the-shoulder question yesterday to Major Parker, who does run that facet of the operation, and he is telling me that his gut feeling is, as it is right now, as best we can tell, it's probably about 50-50.
In the applicant class?
In the applicant pool.
Yeah. With a sixfold increase in the applicant pool, though, they're picking the cream of that crop. I asked Paul the same question this morning. Picking the cream from a crop that is six times larger than in the past should give us a great chance to have very high standards when they actually do select the admittees.
You're not concerned about reduction in quality of the trooper because they still have to go through the academy and pass the academy, right?
No, absolutely, yes, sir. We will give preference to college education, but we've got a goodly number of troops who picked up college along the way. Several of us have done that, and it's a very common aspect of those who join our ranks.
If you take a minute to look at Superintendent Weitzel's history, you'd agree with me that anybody who gets through his academy is going to be a heck of a good trooper.
When you talk about the net and net increase in the number of troopers on the road, does that include those troopers that are going to move over, who are moving over from the Gaming Commission now that they're on the Army Enforcement Division, or is that on top of that?
That's on top of that. All the numbers we're giving you today are simply an effort of applications and recruit schools.
And will some of these new, with the additional applicant class, be going to the toll road?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
We'll put probably 20, 25 folks up there above and beyond what present numbers are.
Roughly a doubling.
Yes, sir.
From 26, Paul, I think, told me this morning, to up by 20 or more, paid for by the transaction, as you know.
I'm sorry, I just want to follow and make sure that I understood, because I probably may not have asked the question very well. When you said that, I guess when the governor said you wanted 200 more troopers on Indiana Road by 2008, that does not include the troopers from coming over from the Gaming
Commission. Oh, ma'am. The next 6 months, 50 people will transition from the boats back to the other duties, be it road or investigations. By next spring, another 30 some will come over.
So I think, just to make sure I understand, I that's how I've understood it, that we were, those people, though they were on the boats, were always counted in the strength of the state police. So we're going to raise the total strength of the state police by 200, and there'll be, by bringing people off the boats, we should have more people in police work, which was another important goal. You know, I noticed they're a lot more polite to you. She said, I must have put that question. With me, they'd say, dummy, you didn't answer the question I asked you.
I don't think I've ever used the word
dummy. No. It was inferred, implied.
So how many troopers will be coming off the boats and back into regular duties?
We'll have 50 transition in the next 6 months, and then we've got 25 or 30 that are left there after that. Is that right, Colonel?
27.
If you're down 200 troopers, how thinly stretched is the force right now? What isn't getting done right now that you want to get done with another 200 troopers?
You know, that's one thing I'm happy to report, and this gives me a chance to call attention to the troops on the road. They have done a remarkable job of keeping everything in check and keeping the numbers up. We're riding with more activity now than we have had for years, despite the fact that our numbers are low. We have asked them to pick up and give us a better effort than what they have in the past, and they've done that. So I can report to you that as of this moment, right now, today, there are 88 people less dead in Indiana's roadways than there were this time last year. Mm-hmm. Furthermore, there are 84 less crashes. And that has been one of the hallmarks of our administration, is trying to reduce the death and injury accidents that are out there. So that gives you an idea of just what kind of a job they're doing. Now, what would we like to do? When we get more numbers, this is huge to us, to increase the agency by 150 and 200 people. What it means to us from now on is that when another ancillary agency calls us and asks us to take a call for them because of their overflow, we can say, yes, where is it? Instead of, I'm sorry, we've got nobody to send. When a task force or the federal agencies ask us for trooper investigators, we can say, how fast do you want them? Instead of, I'm sorry, we've got nobody to give you. It means that our overtime monies will go down. It means that our compensation time off will go down, which is another plus to bring more troopers back on the road. When we have negative numbers, it's a negative spiral that cascades into a lot of problems to the agency. And the polar opposite is also true. When we have high numbers, we have a cascade of pluses. So what would we like to do with more troopers? We'd like to put better service out there on the roadway. And I think anybody who's paid attention in the last 3 or 4 years, you see more state troopers out there on the road with somebody stopped than you have for a long, long time. We hear that all the time. Troops are doing a tremendous job. So I'm real proud of what they're doing. We'll just increase the fine service they're already providing.
So the priority will be road patrols?
Yes, sir.
Have we accelerated the timetable for reaching that goal? Because everyone's been saying end of next year.
My objective has been to strengthen the state police as fast as possible. And again, this is a capacity class at the academy, the first ever lateral class, a source we were not tapping before. In fact, we were losing through our lack of a lateral opportunity that other states offered. If there's a way to get there quicker, this man will find it, and I'll back him up.
One of the things the troopers are finding out on the road right now are people with incorrectly listed expired plates and licenses. Can you give us your reaction to the computer meltdown at the BMV over the last 7 or 8 days?
I'm not happy about it. I don't make any excuses for it. And those people who were inconvenienced have a right to be upset. The commissioners had the computer people on the carpet, and I've had him on the carpet. Things are better, but I think we'll soon be far better than they were before, but no excuses for the disruption that happened. This was a necessary step. It's been in the works for 6 years. He is the fifth commissioner who has worked on this conversion. But that being the case, the disruption should not have occurred to the extent it did, and I join him in apologizing to those people who spent more time than they should have.
Who's at fault? DMV or the vendors or
mission? I just think that I'll take the responsibility, and we knew this was coming. Again, it's been planned for many years, and as I said, he's had the vendors on the carpet, and I've had him, but I'll be happy to go there, too.
Should anybody be fired or lose a contract because of this?
I think it's too soon to say that. I want to see this thing in operation now. It is in where it's operating, and it's back now. It's where it's supposed to be with only a couple of exceptions. But people should not overlook the positives here. This is the answer or a huge step forward in terms of preventing fraud. In terms of preventing people who should never have gotten an Indiana driver's license from doing so, in terms of better customer service. And that's why four previous commissioners have all agreed and worked on this process. So I think that the criticism's well-deserved and accepted for these last few days, but it's the next years as we believe we can deliver a world-class BMV that I'm most interested in. Let's see a little more evidence.
On another topic, you appointed the Gaming Commission chairman to a position at the University of South Carolina.
Yeah.
Which leaves the Gaming Commission job open at a time when there's a lot going on in the gambling world. How soon are you going to fill that chairmanship, or are you going to appoint someone who's already on?
I don't know yet, but you're right, and it's an important vacancy. We don't want to leave it there very long.
Governor, the issue of your living arrangements came up again this week. Why do you think people care where you live?
I don't think most people do. I think a couple editors do, but I don't think most people do. But in any event, it's I think a good news story in the end. Every governor who ever was had his own house and divided his time, and I do too. Mine happens to be in commuting distance and about 20 or 25 minutes from work, so I didn't pick everything up and move it. On top of that, it gave the state, gave us, Sherry and I, an opportunity to, Sherry and me, an opportunity to restore this property to the condition it ought to be in. And it's been a terrific project. Lots of volunteer labor and, of course, lots of folks chipping in. And we're going to be able to leave something that'll be very serviceable for, I think, decades of governors to come. That's a good thing. Incidentally, somebody asked a question. We looked, and it saves a reasonable amount of money that we are not presently residing there. So I don't see a downside, really, but...
Some nonpartisan analysts are predicting 15% jump in property taxes next year. Where is that on your radar screen? Would you offer some initiatives to address that?
Well, I have in the past, and I'll come back to it. I believe we need long-term property tax reform, and that means, to me, flexibility for local government to raise money in other ways. and possibly lifting some of the mandates imposed on local government in the past, for instance, child welfare. And I've proposed that before, and we'll come back and do it again. I want to point out that there are some issues out there in property taxation. They have absolutely nothing to do with the budget that just balanced the books of the state. Zero. They have to do with the end of the inventory tax, the postponement of reassessment and trending. And that all happened before we arrived. And so these are issues we'll have to all get together and work on, but let's not falsely entangle them with budgetary success we've just experienced.
Would you oppose the commitment of any additional state resources to property tax?
No, not necessarily. I just said that I and had proposed, by the way, and in concert with county and city local government, a phase out of child welfare, for instance, or other or levies, and I'm. That's a way for the state. And remember, this all comes from the same taxpayers. There is not some magic bank called the state which prints this money. So we're only talking about which of the taxpayers' pockets government picks. And the right answer, of course, is to pick a little less often. That's what the state just did. As I mentioned this week, some credit for the turnaround in the state's finances. It starts with the legislature to pass the tightest budget in 55 years. Next comes those who administered government very, very carefully, including this man here, and made sure every dollar, we didn't spend a dollar we didn't have to. But some credit should go, it's clear to me now, to local governmental leaders and probably school leaders in the state, because when the bills came in for property tax replacement, it was somewhat less than predicted. So it's clear that out there, a lot of people are being very careful about spending tax dollars, and some credit should be given.
Bob Meek said this week that the next budget should take care of aggressive payment delays before there's any new spending. Mm-hmm. Are you prepared to go that far? What does that mean?
Well, I think it's a very good objective, and I think it may well be possible. And his caution's well placed. It's exactly the same message, as I said, I've been taking around the state this week. No champagne, no confetti. Huge step forward. Work's not done. And yes, I believe those debts, since I believe they should never have been incurred in the first place, that the schools and localities should never have been stiffed to start with, of course I believe that we ought to pay them back on the first day that we can. But from what I see today, I believe that we can continue our return to full solvency and still begin the process of making kindergarten available to every kid in Indiana.
Governor, what do you think should be done with the issue of the sheriff's salaries? We obviously have the news up for very
mm-hmm. I don't have a lot to say about this, except that it's just one more example that we have a very antique system of local government in this state. We've talked about it so often. We have more offices than we need. We have more layers than we need. And we need a modernization, and this may well be part of that.
Can you explain why you believe that localities should be able to pass stricter restrictions on fireworks under the new state law?
Because I'm a believer in community self-rule and home rule. It's the same reason I think that the essence of long-term property tax reform and relief is more freedom and flexibility for localities to raise money in different ways. I think the democracy operates best when decisions are made as close to home as they can be.
Have you heard a lot about fireworks or concerns since
then? Yeah, I've been on the road a lot, and I've heard some, not everywhere, but there were places. And the new law may need some improvement, but I think it was an improvement. First of all, we have new enforcement tools, and some of the vendors were busted and closed down using those tools. There's a new 11 o'clock curfew, which in the communities where it was enforced, I think things stayed under good control. I think that the law, which passed by a large majority, on balance made sense, but it's not perfect, and if it needs to be improved, I'd be more than open to that.
Thank you.
if there was to be some changes to that, how would we offset that revenue raised for the emergency management and the money that's going to the fire?
Well, I think a fee on these things was a good idea, and I think having a fire academy, we're about the last state that doesn't have one. And I think that's a good byproduct of this change, so I would not be supportive of changing that or repealing that.
I guess what I mean is if a community decided, you know, hey, we don't want to sell fire, would there be a possibility of them maybe kicking in some money?
I wouldn't do that. I think the fee can bring in what it does. And
should or is the state have any interest, or should the state get involved in trying to keep that one here?
I hadn't thought about it. Obviously, I hope it stays. It's a great thing. If the mayor asks us, frequently, Mayor Peterson and I work together all the time on things like the Big Ten tournament, for instance. That's good for the whole state when millions and millions of dollars come to a major event, sporting or otherwise. So I don't know what role we could play, but if we could, I'm always glad to jump in. If the mayor sees something I could do, or the folks at the Speedway do, all I got to do is call. I'd be glad to try to help.
I know the state appears to be improving where its public purchasing dollars go, mm-hmm. as far as Indiana, et cetera. But some of the bigger ones that get the headlines aren't really Indiana companies. Uh-huh. Do you find it harder than you thought it would be to get this money to an Indiana company?
I didn't know what to expect. I'm pleased with the overall improvement, but you're right. There's still individual things we trip over that we want to change. As you know, we've gone from somewhere around 60 to 81% of the procurement dollars being spent inside the state. And there have been many of the examples that caught my eye originally have been corrected. One I was really pleased with just recently was that we're now buying Dixie Chopper lawnmowers, which is a great idea anyway. It's the best lawnmower. It's a breakthrough product, and it's a homegrown Hoosier product. And so we have to just keep looking every day. And the folks at DOA know this. When they give me the weekly report, this is the first item because they know this is the most important one to me. But yes, we continue to have to look. Now, do remember that we'll never get to 100, and we shouldn't. There will always be individual contracts where, to protect the taxpayer interest, there'll be some where there just isn't a given good or service available in the state, and there'll be some where, to protect the taxpayer interest, there's just too big a savings available elsewhere. So we set 90% as our goal, and I don't know if that's attainable, but we've gotten two-thirds of the way there in a year and a half. That's not bad. But yes, we're looking every day, and there still are instances that bother me. Well, I don't know enough about it. I asked about that one time, and yeah, I know. And there is a question of availability of supply, but I think there's a possibility of that one happening. I don't honestly know the status.
Can you comment on the Homeland Security report?
Well, you know, it took me by surprise too. In fact, I was unclear about the history. The list was sent in 2004. And so I don't really know much about the composition of it, but I think people did a good faith job.
Did you ask the director of our team to reevaluate or?
Well, I asked him, to tell me what was up. It's really the list, the final list, and the editing down of the list, so forth, was, I believe, a federal matter. So I'm sure every state has items on the list that are marginal at best. But I think whoever put it together initially was, as I say, doing a good faith job. This was not meant to be just targets of terror or just targets of natural disaster, but also facilities that could be used in the event of some such event. And I'm not going to fault people, whoever that was, that tried to be thorough in what they did. And as I understand it, that was probably their assignment.
Governor, back to the BMB computer problem.
I don't know enough to answer that question. I just don't. You know, I'm not pleased with this particular conversion. But again, I want to see the thing in practice. What really matters, is how's it working next week and in the years ahead. And we just don't know that yet. And so I can't answer your question. I don't know if it's the same unit of the very large company. Or... Yeah.
They sent you a list, so I'm sorry, Mary Beth. With some of the problems that have cropped up at the Juvenile Detention Center in Marion County that apparently occurred under Judge Payne's leadership, do you have any question or qualms? Are you still have faith in Judge Payne in leading the DCS?
I do. I mean, all I can speak to is what he's done in 18 months. He's done what I wanted him to do, just like this man has. He has really strengthened we've added caseworkers. Caseloads are coming down. He's put in protocols for dealing with problems like kids exposed to meth that we hadn't been equipped to deal with before. And he's got his whole heart and soul in the protection of kids, and he's doing those things we ask him to do. And these historical items, I just don't know enough about to change my assessment. Thank you.